Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. This is a special edition. We are going to round up the FA Women's Super League, which finished off in the last few weeks. And I've got a couple of experts to join me to round up the season. I have a previous guest on the show, Joe Curry from BBC Sport. But as always, the views of Joe for this episode are not necessarily those of the BBC. Joe, you all right?
Oh, very well. Thank you for including me in this.
Always a pleasure. And his first appearance on the show, but a good friend of mine who comes to a lot of women's football matches and will be joining me in Holland next week ahead of England against the Netherlands, freelance women's football writer Andrew Gibney. Andrew, how you doing, mate?
Very well, Kieran. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm all good. So the idea of this show is really to have a little look at back at the FA Women's Super League in 2016. Of course, Manchester City Women won the title. They went the season undefeated. We sadly lost Doncaster Rovers Belles to relegation. We will see the season, see the league grow in numbers next year because we've lost one team, but we gained two in the form of Yeovil Town Ladies and Bristol City Women. Andrew, you covered Manchester City Women in depth quite a lot last year for the various outlets that you work for. They won the league, they went undefeated. What were the kind of key things that came out of their season? What were the key things that you noticed as to why they were able to be so dominant?
I think, first of all, was the size of the squad. And because we sort of been critical of Pedro Rose and Arsenal for having too many players. And Nick Cushing, very early on, because we all questioned him about the amount of players that he brought in, said he wanted to have a really small squad and use the youth players. I mean, at some point they had three subs, four subs. The end of the season with two goalkeepers on the bench. But it kept, you knew who was going to play. The players would have known who's going to play. They settled really well. I think they got quite lucky with some injuries that they didn't get quite overloaded when they lost players like Izzy Christensen was out, Megan Campbell. They were able to cope with that. And yeah, I think that sort of consistency and stability really, really shone through. And I think it helped everyone at that club know their place and just carry on with the football and know what's going to come week after week.
Joe, I know that being based up in the north as well, you saw a lot of City and were able to speak to players over the course of the season. Was one of the key things maybe the team camaraderie and the way that team managed to stay together? It was very much from the outside looking in. It looked like a team that was enjoying their football and enjoying being a part of that group as well.
I mean, very much. This is a team that's only, people forget, it's only a couple of years old, really. And it's a core team that have come through in the last few years. And when they first started out, I think a lot of people looked at the likes of Steph Horton and Jill Scott and Karen Barzee and sort of scratched their heads and say, oh, why are they going to Man City? When at the time, there were much bigger clubs around. But they've built this core squad. And as Andrew says, it's not been a big squad this season. There's been a lot of finger-pointing at City saying, oh, they've bought the league, they spent all this money. But if you look at their squad, it's pretty small compared to a lot of the other clubs, and it's not packed with international superstars. So I think the fact that the core of the team is British, mostly English, but British, I think has also helped the season.
And I guess one of the other things that helps, and I guess both of you can make your comments, and I'll start with you, Andrew, is maybe those unsung heroes that emerged this year. Georgia Stanway was a standout this year. She's just been nominated for Young Sports Personality of the Year, and what an honour that is. And Kira Walsh has received a lot of plaudits as well. Those young players really stepping up to the mark kind of complemented the more experienced heads.
Yeah, those two. I mean, Abby McManus as well, the first half of the season came through so well. She looked fantastic beside Steph Horton. Then when she got injured, you got Jennifer Beattie coming back and playing centre-back and possibly one of the best defenders in the league. And then you've got Kira Walsh coming back, and I've called Kira Walsh in a good sense the sort of Man City Sergio Busquets, not in the dirty way that he's got a reputation for, but in the reading the game and her passing range is just phenomenal for someone so young. You forget how young she is when she's on the ball, and so glad to see her get the goal against Bromby in the Champions League. It sort of put an exclamation point on her fantastic season. But it's those players who are not the sort of the lionesses that get all the attention that have really, really stepped up, and that's why Nick hasn't had to go and spend money and bring in lots of other players, because he's got them at the club already.
Yeah, and I think Joe made a good point earlier about the international stars that maybe made the headlines at the beginning of the season. Kosovare Aslani was one of them. During the course of the season, they signed the Dutch player Tessel Middag. But with the greatest respect to them, while Kosa played a lot of games and while Tessel obviously had her impact, they weren't necessarily the standouts this season. And I think it was probably that core spine that they've had since pretty much day one, the likes of Karen Bardsley, Steph Horton, Jen Beattie again was very good this season. I think she was again very underrated but had another good season. And Joe, they've managed to do this not just in the league, but they of course won the Continental Cup, they got to the semi-finals of the FA Cup, and they now find themselves in the quarter-finals of the Champions League, where they'll face another Danish side in Fortuna Hjørring. It's almost flawless this year, hasn't it? It's almost going to be difficult to top next year.
It's been magnificent from start to finish. I think the core to their success on the pitch has really been that defence. You know, that centre-back partnership for most of the season between Steph Horton and Jen Beattie has been outstanding. Karen Bardsley, you know, world-class goalkeeper. But as Andrew says, it's Kira Walsh that I actually think deserves a lot of the plaudits this year. She was brought in last year as a youngster from Blackburn. No one knew who she was. She got injured at the start of the season. This is last year. You remember Man City had a terrible start to the season last year. It was when she got fit last year, they brought her back into the team. That's when they had that brilliant run of form last year. I think it's down to her that actually she's allowed the rest of the team to go about their job. So I think Kira Walsh deserves a lot of the plaudits. But as you say, it's been a magnificent season for Manchester City. They've won two titles, two bits of silverware. It's going to be really interesting to see how they go on in the Champions League quarterfinals. But yeah, as you say, it's going to be interesting next year to see if they can top it. It's all going to be down to, and I think, the other clubs in the league and whether they can compete. Because at the moment, Manchester City are unbeatable.
Yeah, as they demonstrated this year.
You have to give credit as well. At the end of the season, when the won the league against Chelsea, so you go out and celebrate that, and then you come back down to get back up for the cup game against Birmingham, which obviously you have to celebrate again, then to get back up for the Champions League game against Bromby as well. That up and down roller coaster must have been so hard as staff to sort of keep the players in check. I think there were some celebrations in Copenhagen after the second leg of the Champions League, but that takes so much professionalism, which I guess some clubs don't get the credit for in WSL, that they've really nailed down. And Nick was very sort of calm to sort of stress the point that the season's not over yet, the season's not over until that second leg against Bromby, and now they can sort of relax until the spring series starts.
Yeah, very much so. I remember when we were at the game against Chelsea, one of the last league games of the season, he said, you know, if the players go out and party tonight, they put their place in the squad next week at risk. He was very adamant that no celebrations would be starting until the end of the season. Well, I was at the FA Awards recently and managed to grab a very quick chat with Captain Steph Horton along with a few others. So here's a few lines from Steph about the Manchester City season.
You must be over the moon about 2016. Could it have gone any better for you?
Yeah, we could have won the FA Cup, but no luck. I think for us to have two trophies is unbelievable. To reach the Champions League quarterfinals, a fantastic achievement by the whole squad, and of course to qualify for the Euros as well with England. 2016 has definitely been pretty special.
Where do you rank each achievement? Which is the top one, Steph, out of all of them? Unbeaten season, league title, Continental Cup, Champions League quarterfinal, which one's the top?
I think for me, the league title's the one that we were definitely aiming for. I think we went so close last year, and to go unbeaten in that season as well, I don't think many teams will do that over the course of the coming years, because teams will strengthen. And for us to do that with such a small squad as well, I think it's a credit to the whole girls and to the whole staff as well.
You played in a dominant side at Arsenal. You now are playing in another very, very good side in Manchester City. They've almost raised the bar this season. How different is this team to the one that maybe you played at Arsenal, and how impressed have you been with not just what's been going on the pitch, but what's been going off it as well?
I think with Arsenal, I think the players that I played with there were unbelievable players. I think individually they could change a game, they could win a game by themselves, and I was very fortunate enough to play with the likes of Kelly Smith, the likes of Kim Little, and I'll be forever grateful for that. And I had a fantastic time at Arsenal, but to see the progress of Man City over the last few years and to be very much a part of that and see where we've come from and how we've grown as a club has been unbelievable, and to be a part of that and to see us progress every single year has been pretty special.
You can't get away from the achievements with England as well, an unbeaten qualification period for Euro 2017. Talk about that, but also your how happy you are that you're going to get a chance to play against Kim Little in the Netherlands next year.
Yeah, I mean, look, for England, we've had a great season. I think for us to qualify for the Euros was obviously the main objective, and to do that early and have the chance to play against the likes of Germany, we played against France twice, and also USA, just to see where we are and as a marker, and that was very early on in the season. So I feel as though we performed very well. We've got a really together squad, which is vital for when you're going away on long tournaments, and now the prep really starts along with the Euros. And as for the likes of Kim and the likes of Jennifer Beattie and Jane Ross, they're my close friends, and it'll be really exciting to play against them, and it'll be a tasty fixture, I'm sure.
And of course, the pool of players that Mark Sampson has available to him now, unbelievable the talent, unbelievable the number of players. You're captain, so I'm not saying your place is guaranteed, but it's one of the more safe positions. But how much have you noticed the level in training and competition from players, knowing that if you're off your game, you're going to lose your place?
I think that's what we try to build within the squad, is competition for places, but doing things for the team. And I really believe that we're in that place, and it's a healthy competition, and it gets the best out of you as an individual. And I know that my place is definitely not guaranteed, because we have so many good defenders coming through, and not youngsters but also experienced players as well, so it definitely keeps me on my toes, and it keeps a lot of the players on their toes, and it's healthy, and hopefully it can get the best out of all of us.
You've got very much an English court system, haven't you? I mean, when the WSL started, quite a lot of teams brought in several foreign players and so on, but you've ended up with almost basically half England team, a couple of Scots obviously. has that helped though?
I think for me, especially as a defender, you try and build relationships with certain people, and to build relationships with KB and Lucy, it's vitally important when you're going into an England setup. And I think, as you said, we have got pretty much the spine of our team is guaranteed to be in the England squad, and which I think is fantastic for the club, but also for us as individuals, because you get to know that player more, and no matter what system we play at England, you kind of know what people's strengths and weaknesses are, and you know what they favour, what type of foot they want the ball on. And I think it can only do us well for England and for Manchester City to be playing with each other week in, week out, and train every single day.
It's a big challenge for the winter now, keeping fit before the next round.
Yeah.
Keeping sharp rather than fit.
I mean, look, it's going to be a short period of time for us to be off. I think we've been given 2 weeks off, and then you start again trying to do your pre-season bits. So I think we know that it's going to be a tough schedule next year. I think for 8 months we're not going to have any break, and it's important that you get as much rest as you possibly can. But the fitness levels of all the girls is always improving, and I know that how dedicated we are and the training that we want to do to be able to be the best shape that we can be.
The Champions League, through to the quarterfinals, I mean how big a statement is that for what Manchester City want to be as a club, and where you want to see yourself on the European level?
I think it says a lot about the club, to be honest. I think to be able to get qualification for Champions League in our second year, and then to be in the quarterfinals of the Champions League by our third season, it's fantastic. And not only did we want to be the best team in England, we wanted to be one of the best teams in Europe, and I feel as though we've got the foundations and the setup to be able to compete with the likes of Wolfsburg and Lyon. And it might not be this year, it might not be next year, but I really feel that we are setting the standards for the whole of the league.
So that was Steph Horton. Guys, we could talk about Man City all day, but of course there are a number of teams in this league. We're not going to go through team by team, but I think it's a case of picking up the key themes and the key topics. Now, obviously, finishing behind Manchester City were last year's champions Chelsea. They pushed them quite hard over the course of the season. Ennio Lorelluco was the Golden Boot winner. I know being based in the north, you probably don't get to see as much of Chelsea, but I know you have seen them. Where do we think Chelsea are at the moment? They've obviously signed Maren Mjelde, the Norwegian international, who will add some steel in midfield and can also play at centre-back if required. But Joe, I'll come to you first. We'll rotate it. Where do you think Chelsea are, and where do you think they probably need to strengthen to challenge City next year?
What I've struggled to get my head around this year was work out whether Chelsea were just as good as they were last year and City were better, or whether that City had regressed from last season. You look at the players they brought in pre-season, the fact they brought in Karen Carney, they're a forward line, they're attacking forwards. Those five players of Jiso Young, Karen Carney, Ennio Lucco, Gemma Davison and Frank Kirby on paper should have been banging goals left, right and centre on paper. They should have been streets ahead. But I do wonder whether having all those attacking players on paper was actually quite hard for Emma Hayes to keep all of them happy, because it was rare that all five of them played, and at times there were only two or three of them playing. I think that they've brought in a player that can possibly play at centre-back next year will help. I think their defensive line is something that is one area they can work on, because their midfield, their attacking lineup, and their goalkeeper is excellent. So for me, it's a question mark of, have Chelsea regressed, or is it just that Manchester City have been better this year? And I'd be interested in Andrew's point of view on that.
Well, over to you, Andrew.
I think it's probably a little mixture of both, because obviously Man City go unbeaten, it's hard to match that. And there's, you look at Chelsea's results, there really was a little blip in the summer, which was, I mean, a really disjointed time when you had the men's Euros going on. They drew at home to Birmingham, and they drew, they lost at home to Arsenal. Obviously, they lost the two games to Man City, which is huge. But apart from that, that's the only two really times where you quite, like, the results went against them. And Emma started sort of changing the formation around. She went free the back at times. I think trying to find, as Joe said, the right way to get all those really talented forwards into play. They lost Frank Kirby for injury, but maybe does it help or hinder that you have one less option to choose from? And I think G maybe wasn't at the same level she was when they won last season's title. And you need someone, Gemma Davison and Callum Carney, running at defenders, and they didn't quite always get that. And yeah, I think Emma was trying to find a solution to how to catch City, and they just didn't find that consistency and the right way to combine the best players she's got. And it's going to be interesting to see how she deals with that going into the spring series and who she buys, because you can't imagine they're going to rely on the one signing before the season starts again.
Yeah, I think the difficulty that I find with Chelsea is I struggle to see where they actually strengthen. I think you've both spoken about that forward line that they've got. I agree, I don't think G had the season that maybe she has had in previous years. The goalkeeper is without question one of the best in the league, in Hedvig Lindahl. She's just won an award out in Sweden for her performances in 2016. Defensively, Gilly Flaherty and Niamh Fahey are as good a centre-back pairing as you're going to get. They've just, as I said, added Maren Mjelde to the midfield, and they already have the likes of Katie Chapman and Millie Bright, who of course won the Young Player of the Year at the FA Awards last week. I struggle to see where they improve, and I guess in terms of Emma Hayes' plans now, she's now got to think about maybe not necessarily looking at players that can slot into the first 11, but maybe just maybe the issue is a little bit of depth, and when the injuries hit or the suspensions hit, it could well be that that's where they need to get those reinforcements in. But I think Chelsea had a good season.
I also wonder, teams like Chelsea and Man City, they've come to this crossroads now, is like, how much more talent is there in WSL that you can realistically sign that's going to improve your team? And it's, how do you get the next level of player to come from France, from Germany, from Sweden, to come to WSL at their peak? Rather than maybe signing depth players, you're signing players that enhance what you've got already more than what you can get from in England, and take the team to the next level, because that has to be the next step for both these teams, is to be ultra competitive in the Champions League and be considered the favourites with Wolfsburg and Lyon and PSG and Rosengard.
Absolutely, and I think you make a really good point there, is we are talking about the FA Women's Super League, it's in its, what, fifth or sixth year now. We're still talking about a league that is growing. We're still talking about a league that is, in my mind, and it's just my opinion, is still behind, certainly Germany, and to a lot of people it will be behind the likes of the United States and possibly even France, only considering the likes of Lyon and PSG. But the fact that it has been able to attract the players that it has done over the last couple of years shows that it's growing. And you're right, they now need to be looking at what is the next level of player that they are able to attract, because the move-in season is going to play a part in that as well. A lot of players have not come to the WSL because of the fact that it runs during the summer and it doesn't necessarily fit in with their schedule. Now that it's going to move to September through to May from next year, it may well be that we see more players coming from the Frauen-Bundesliga or from the French Division and, or maybe some American players as well, because the seasons are not going to clash as much as they have done. So, yeah, I think for Chelsea, it is a case of seeing what players they can get that are going to make it better, but maybe adding a little bit more depth is going to be that key. But I think, you know, we'll move on to, I think, one of the surprise teams of the season, and we'll jump around over the course of the league. We're not going to go 1 to 9. The surprise team for me this season, there were two actually, and we could probably cover them off together because they both finished one after the other, were Birmingham City Ladies and Liverpool. I think, Andrew, this is your opportunity to be smug in a minute because I know that you didn't tip them to struggle.
But that's not like Andrew at all.
No, I know. At the start of the season, a lot of people had Liverpool Ladies and Birmingham City Ladies to struggle. Now, this was before, and I will stress this, this was before they made some of the signings that they had done. But Joe, I know that you saw a lot of Liverpool this year. They lost Matt Beard, they lost Farrah Williams, they lost Tash Dowie, three really key people in terms of who had, of personnel who brought success to that team. Both departed at the, all departed at the start of the season, and they brought in Scott Rogers, who for a lot of people won't have known what he was about and what he would be able to bring to the team. But he did a good job, didn't he? He did a very good job based on bringing in the players that allowed him to be competitive and taking that team to a mid-table finish.
I think he did extremely well, bearing in mind he's not had any first team experience and certainly not at WSL level. The fact he lost his entire squad, and I'm not saying all the players left because, you know, they walked out on him. He didn't want to keep that many. I'm told the only player he was really fussed about keeping was Farrah Williams, but he lost her, as you say, lost Tash Dowie, lost his goalkeeper. But yeah, he brought in nine new signings. I think everyone was scratching their heads and saying, yeah, there's some blooming good players there, but are they going to gel as a team? And yeah, it was a slow start to the season, but some of the signings I think are absolutely outstanding. Shanice van der Sanden, for one, the Dutch forward. She's, for me, probably the most, been the most exciting player in the league to watch. She's quick, she's dangerous, and she's strong. The fact she scored against the United States for Holland earlier this year just shows how good she is. But yeah, Liverpool, for me, I was a little bit worried because last season, at times, they were pretty awful. They had such an injury crisis last year, but that they were poor. And coming into this year with a brand new squad, I couldn't see really how it was going to gel in time. And yeah, it did take some time, but this is a team that came close to finishing third in the league. Yeah, they finished fifth, but if they finished third, everyone would be going, oh, you know, that's team of the year. But Scott Rogers, I think he deserves a lot of plaudits for not just bringing in a very good calibre of player across the nine that he brought in. He brought in Scotland internationals and Caroline Weir. He brought in Welsh internationals in Sophie Ingle and Tash Harding. You know, and I think he should have been up there for manager of the year, if I'm really honest.
And I think he probably will have been. I think it's very difficult. We obviously know that Nick Cushing got Manager of the Year at the FA Awards last week, and I think it would have been very difficult to offer it to anyone else. But I would have put Scott second, without a doubt, and probably Emma Hayes in that top three based on the seasons that managers had and clubs had. But, Andrew, I know you saw a lot of Liverpool as well, and here's your opportunity, mate. You didn't tip them to struggle, did you?
No, I didn't. And it came from, I spoke to Scott really early when he got appointed, and I was sort of sold straight away by just speaking to him and the sort of passion, the really methodical way that he was going through what he wanted to do. And he, like he said straight away, before Assisat went to Arsenal, that Farrah was the only player that had left that he didn't want to leave. I think he dealt with that very well. Sophie Ingle played in midfield to start with, then went to defence. Caroline Weir, who's had a wonderful season and is only going to get better. And people like Katie Zell maybe don't get enough credit for what season she had. I think the blend of youth and pace just disrupted a lot of teams. I think one thing goes against them is playing on that pitch in Widnes. It doesn't quite suit the way they play. And they played some really great football at times and just got better and better.
Yeah, no, agreed. I think they played some good stuff, and you're right. The likes of Katie Zellum and Caroline Weir really kind of drove that team forward. I think the return to form of Gemma Bonner was really key. She's just been called back into the England squad, hasn't she? I think she had...
Yeah, me and Joe were quite critical of Gemma last season under Matt Beard. There was a lot of aimless long balls, and this season she's really toned that down and is a lot more confident on the ball and just looks a much better player all round for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think
Gemma Bonner, for me, is definitely one of the standout players for Liverpool this year. And like lots of people, I'm so pleased to see her back in the England squad because I think she took being left out of the World Cup squad pretty hard. So it's great to see her back. But it's an interesting point Andrew made about the pitch, because it's the only pitch in the top division that isn't real grass. It plays on rubber crumb. And I wonder whether that will put more international high-profile players coming to Liverpool in the future.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, I can tell you now that Carly Lloyd is not going to go to Liverpool if they're playing on that pitch. No chance, absolutely no chance. The odds are long as it is, but she's not going to go if they're playing on that pitch. I can tell you that now.
Someone on Twitter mentioned you might see in the spring series a few people been injured before their trip to Widnes, just in case it impacts the Euros chances if they take a bad slip on that.
Well, it's a kind of tongue-in-cheek comment, but it's a fair one as well, isn't it? We know that in the men's game, the likes of, I think it was Thierry Henry, when he was playing for the New York Red Bulls, he wouldn't play at certain grounds because he was worried about getting injured. And I think Didier Drogba might be doing the same. I don't want to be quoted on that, but I know that there are players in certain countries that won't play.
France as well, Zlatan wouldn't play at Lorient, who've got a plastic pitch. I mean, even Nancy have got one, even their own coach called it a car park.
Yeah, so it does happen. It does happen. But as I say, I think Liverpool have done really, really well. I think Satara Murray had a very good season. You speak to Liverpool fans, they were very complimentary of her after a very difficult first season. Mandy van der Berg has left the club. Obviously, she's gone to Reading Women, and I'm sure that Liverpool have a player lined up to replace her. I won't speculate over that one, but I think most of us know who that's probably going to be. But yeah, as
you
I said,
you tell us something.
My lips are sealed. I'm not doing that.
But I mentioned two teams, not just Liverpool, but Birmingham City as well. When I spoke to Aoife Mannion at the start of the season, I said to her, a lot of people are tipping you to struggle. And Aoife is one of those individuals where she won't sugarcoat it. She responded by saying, yeah, do you know what? I can see why people would tip us to struggle because we've lost Karen Carney, who's been the linchpin of our team, and we haven't been able to replace someone like her. And I do understand why people might think that. But what people don't realise is that we're a very together group. We have got some talent in that group, and she was proved absolutely right. And finishing fourth, I think you've got to put David Parker and Marcus Bignot up there with Manager of the Year as well, because I think when you look at the players that they had to work with, the additions that they made in getting, I mean, Ann-Kathrin Berger was a phenomenal signing, top-class goalkeeper, getting in an experienced international like Andrin Hegerberg as well, who can add quality in midfield. But I think it was the likes of Keris Harapi for Mannion, Kirsty Lynette, who really stepped up to the plate this season. And if I'm honest, I don't think they miss Karen Carney that much.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw Karen Carney leave at the start of the season, I was amongst those saying, yeah, they're going to struggle. And then sort of mid-season when Jade Moore and Joe Potter also left the club, that's all their England international players gone. You're like, wow, something can't be that right there. But actually, they've been fantastic, and not just finishing fourth, but they've also had a cup final as well. And when they came to Manchester City, which was technically a neutral ground, but when they came to Manchester City for that Conti Cup final, they gave it beans. I mean, they gave Manchester City probably the toughest game they've had all season. And yeah, they're another team that deserve the plaudits because they haven't spent big. Their budget isn't huge. Not all the players are full-time. And yet they've managed to push some of the bigger teams this year all the way. And for Aoife Mannion in particular, what I really like seeing at the end of the season is a lot of people, journos and fans and bloggers, like to do their own personal, this is my WSL team of the year. And Aoife Mannion has featured in most of those teams of the year. And some people are tipping her for possibly an England call-up, a senior England call-up, which for a player at a club the size of Birmingham, and looking at the players they've got now, I think it'd be terrific.
Yeah, I must say, as smug as I can be about Liverpool personality, I can't say the same for Birmingham. I had them going down, and you can see what it's built on. They've only conceded 13 goals, but only Man City's 4 goals betters that, but only scored 18, so it's a very much, apart from the last, they scored 7 on the last day, so it could have been 11 scored and 13 conceded, but it was their defensively they were excellent, and watching them the two games here in Manchester, Berger and goal, I thought, was phenomenal. So unlucky to lose Lucy Bronze's goal in the Conti Cup final. And again, they took the lead against Man City, who struggled that really final day and really could have lost their unbeaten record there to Birmingham, because they stuck in, and as soon as you go a goal behind against them, you're playing into their hands, because you have to attack them, so you're playing to their strengths, defending. And you said they maybe didn't miss Karen Carney, but you wonder, with that really solid defence, with that one bit of quality up front, could they have gone a little bit better? And see that when they've come fourth with 27 points, because they just need that little bit of quality, I think, in the final third to really hammer home how good defensively they are to take advantage of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Is someone ruffling around in the background?
I think it's Joe.
Joe, what are you doing?
I was just taking my nail varnish off, sorry.
Shocking. Professional is always BBC.
I can hear this scraping in the background, like this.
Sorry.
I'm leaving that in.
Oh, so professional.
I know. I'm leaving
as
that
you were, Kieran, as you were.
Yeah, I'm lost now. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, when I say they didn't miss Karen Carney, of course any team is going to miss a player like Karen Carney. But I think what I mean by that by that comment is they were able to perform at a level and they were able to compete without her. But you're absolutely right. They would have potentially been able to maybe even finish higher if they'd had someone like her.
That's something to build on, wasn't it? If you've got that defensive solidity and you can add a little bit more quality in the final four, which they've got, you said, Trusty Lynette and Lolly as well. Was always a really good player as well. They need to add a little bit more to that. There's really a really good foundation there for a really good team. And you just wonder, we said, can they go a bit higher? Is it, how do you then challenge for that third place, second place? Is there a ceiling of coming fourth and you have to do that consistently, or is there a real chance they can really push for top three?
Well, they will. If they were going to finish third, they will have been challenging Arsenal. Now, in terms of topics and themes, I kind of want to put Arsenal probably in the group with Sunderland and Notts County, which probably sounds harsh, but when I put them in that category, I think it's teams that I look at that possibly underachieve this season. And I put that to you guys, whether you agree or not. Arsenal, I think with the squad that they were able to build this year, with the quality that they were able to obtain in the likes of Josie Henning, who went on to win a gold medal in the Olympics, the likes of Asisat Oshoala, who, of course, was the BBC Player of the Year last year, and then with Notts County and Sunderland, Sunderland having such a good first season in WSL, not being able to follow on from that, and in my opinion, not having the greatest of season. And Notts County, I think it's probably a little bit unfair for me to say they underachieved, because they had some real injury problems this year, didn't they, with losing Carly Telford and then Ellen White at the end of the season. But I'd be interested to know where you guys put those, that cluster of three, and by all means, you know, break it down team by team if you choose to. And Joe, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I'll start quickly with Sunderland. Sunderland last year, as you said, had a fantastic maiden season in WSL1. I think that's part of it because they took teams by surprise. They came up from WSL2, teams in the top division. I don't think you knew a huge amount about them, and they were able to sort of go about their work quietly, and that's why they did so well. And also Beth Mead was on fire last year, but they were very much, I don't mean this disrespectfully, but certainly in terms of goal scoring, they were a one player team. Now teams got very wise to that, and this year I think they knew how to handle Beth Mead. Without Beth Mead scoring goals, that's why Sunderland struggled. I don't think it helped that they didn't make huge signings at the start of the year, but the ones they brought in, Kaya Showman I think it was, and another player who got injured right at the beginning. And also the fact that they signed Crystal Johnson from Manchester City was a great signing, but then after a couple of months she left the club and went to Everton. So the players they brought in didn't actually make an effect because they didn't really play. As you say, Notts County had huge, huge injury problems. I think that really stumped them right from the outset. You lose your goalkeeper like Carly Telford, you're going to struggle. They lost Ellen White towards the end of the season with a broken collarbone. They've had Sophie Bradley come back from long-term injury, then be injured again. And I think it's hard to judge Notts County, the sort of season they've had, because so many of their big players have been out injured. Arsenal, I think you're right to put them in a sort of category of teams that have struggled and underperformed. I mean, them winning the FA Cup at Wembley was their saving grace this year. With that kind of squad, they should be winning or challenging for more titles. Winning the FA Cup at Wembley was huge, and I think that would probably possibly help Pedro, keep his job there, because finishing where they did, third in the league, but not really challenging the top two, they're not going to have Champions League yet again. They haven't really pushed Manchester City or Chelsea. And when you look at the squad they've got and the money they must have spent to get that squad, you have to ask questions as to where it's gone wrong this year. And I wonder whether it's the size of the squad is huge, and nearly every player in that squad is a senior international player. And if they can't play 90 minutes each week, you're not going to have a happy squad. And I don't know if it's true, but I suspect that it was a very hard situation to manage, having so many good players and not all of them being able to play week in, week out.
Andrew?
Yeah. Arsenal's a weird one because you say that they're underachieved, but they won 10 games. And but they did underachieve. Whenever you watch them, especially, I think it's more the big games. They beat Chelsea away. But when they came to Man City, although Gemma Rose got sent off quite early on, they just didn't seem to have an answer to anything City could do. And even having Oshoala, who was really bossing Steph Houghton in defence, beyond that, there was just not a lot. And it just didn't gel, and Pedro, I think, struggled to find his best team, find his best 11, which doesn't help when there's maybe like two 11s that could maybe beat most teams in WSL. And their season sort of started and ended with that FA Cup final. They got up for that one game, won the FA Cup, and then really didn't do much else after that. And Pedro, as much as a lovely guy is, and you can see he's a good manager, you can have too many good options, and it's only going to get worse because obviously Kim Little's coming in, and yeah, you've got the three Spanish girls have gone who are very good players, but he's going to have to get results sooner or later. And the problem that WSL now has is only two teams are going to qualify for the Champions League. So those three big names, someone has to miss out, and at this point, you can't see it not being Arsenal because the other two are in a much stronger position. So they definitely underachieve, but going forward, someone has to each season. And it's going to be interesting to see how the three teams deal with that and that adversity of not being in the Champions League one year. It happens to Chelsea, does Emma go? If it happens to Man City, does that project dismantle? It's a really interesting sort of side plot to how the league grows and progresses.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. And obviously, of all the clubs in the league, Arsenal was the one that I saw the most because it's the most local to me. And I saw the kind of chopping and changing of personnel and formations. Daniel van der Donk played as a false nine at times. Then at times he had Asisat Oshwala and then Natalia. And then Leah Williamson played at centre-back and at left-back and at holding midfield. And I think the key thing is you guys have hit the nail on the head. It's finding your best team and making sure that you have the right number of players in that squad. Manchester City, we've already mentioned, didn't have the biggest squad, but Nick Cushing was able to probably keep those players happy because when Georgia Stanley wasn't playing, Tony Duggan wasn't playing. And if Kira Walsh wasn't playing, Tessel Middag was playing. And if Kosovari Aslani wasn't playing, Nikita Paris was playing. They was able to kind of rotate them as and when he needed to. And I think with Arsenal, you know, we saw Kelly Smith absolutely boss the FA Cup final because she is one of those big-time players, but she didn't play an awful lot through the season. But with her playing in the FA Cup final, it meant someone else had to miss out. So I think the problem that he had, and I spoke to him probably about 6 to 8 weeks ago and on this show, and he did admit that the numbers were probably a little bit too big and it wasn't an ideal scenario. And I think they went from one extreme to the next. They had massive injury problems in 2015 where they were short and were sometimes struggling to name a full-strength bench. And then at times this year he had too many players available, and players like sometimes Kate McCabe, who is an Irish international, couldn't even get on the bench. So it's getting that balance right.
You're trying to build a squad, and you look at the men's game where you have maybe try a 25 sort of player squad for a season, but you're playing 38 games. Whereas in WSL, you have 16 games. Do you really need that big a squad to cope with injuries? But because you maybe get a month between games, so a player can recover and get back from injury, maybe only miss one game in a month.
Yeah.
You don't need a player in each position. You maybe just need a good 18. And then if you've got youngsters, which Arsenal have, and some of them are scattered all over the country, different teams, you should have enough to really go through a whole season. And I think maybe he's went too big on the numbers. And I think on a longer season, it'd be fine, because you've got everyone can get games. But in such a short season, that's really going to affect who can play and when they can play.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, he's added Kim Little, so that's going to add undoubted quality, because she's a player that has left the WSL and come back an even better one from her time in Seattle. Joe kind of gave her views on Sunderland and Notts County, mate. I wondered what your views were in terms of what Sunderland have to do, maybe, to try and get back to the level that they were in Season 1. And where Notts County go, I mean, Notts County, since the WSL one, even from the days of Lincoln Ladies, they've kind of been that mid-table team. They've never really troubled the teams at the top. They've kind of flirted with the teams near the bottom. But what does Rick Parsonwell have to do to try and get that team to the next level? Because he has a really strong core of players, the likes of Carly Telford and Amy Turner, Joe Potter, Jade Moore, Jess Clark, Ellen White. These are international players, and yet they don't seem to be able to kind of push the teams at the top.
I mean, I saw a lot of them last season, just the way they got to the sort of the finals of the Cups and where they were playing up here in Liverpool. And I was always impressed by the way Rick sets his team out, the way he dictates to them when they're on the pitch, so where they need to be, and very vocal. And you just thought, well, if they can get a little bit more quality, they could really challenge. And they got that. They got Joe Potter and Jade Moore and Angharad James. You think, well, the midfield's definitely strengthened and they've got three really good forwards. Defence looks good. It's hard to see where it went wrong. And I suppose it comes back to what I was saying about the length of the season. If you don't start well in WSL, you sort of, it's hard to get back into a rhythm because of the way it was in this season was the most disjointed it's been for a while. And if you can't get that momentum going, and if you've lost the game and you have to wait another month to play again, going to training isn't going to be the easiest thing because you're down a bit. And I think Sunderland suffered from that as well, because I went to Sunderland's first game last season against Liverpool and they won, and Beth Mead scored, and they were on a high from that point. Lose your first couple of games, it's really hard to turn that around. And Rick, I think, this has to show that maybe he's a bit more tactical sort of variety. But I think you know what you're going to get from Notts County, and everyone now knows what you're going to get from Notts County. He needs to show a little bit of something different in games where he can maybe, like Joe said, some non-surprise people. Notts County are not surprising anyone. No matter who they've got in that team, you know how they're going to play. So a little bit of variety there. And just one or two signings to sort of freshen and strengthen. And I think they've got a really good team. And I think they could challenge. If Arsenal or Chelsea or City don't have a good season, there's a challenge for third place. And they should be involved in that. They do have the players to do it.
And Sunderland, do we think that Carlton Fairweather maybe has one of the jobs that maybe is going to be in the spotlight in the off-season and really needs to start next year well if he is in that position?
It depends what they expect from Sunderland. Because really, they're outside that bracket of sort of Birmingham, Liverpool, Notts County, they're in that bottom bracket. And with the two more teams coming up, they really shouldn't be relegation struggles. But if they start slowly like they have, and you wonder, is Beth Mead going to be there? She might be there for the spring series. Is she going to be there for next season? They need to find a way to... You don't need to have as Birmingham proved, you don't have to have the best stars, but you need to be a team, you need to be together and have an identity and a way of playing. And I think Carlton lost that this season, and they were really defensively poor. I mean, they scored more goals than Reading and Notts County, and they won less than Birmingham. So there's something there, but yeah, there's a lack of quality, I think, all around the whole team, and they need to maybe try and follow Birmingham's lead and be defensively a lot more solid to build on that. And then if you get some draws, you never know what can happen.
Well, I said at the start of the show that we weren't going to go team by team. Absolutely. And we were going to do it by themes, but that is an epic fail on my part. So, yeah, that's what you get for not writing a running order, because that's a habit that I have every single time that I record this show. But screw it, I don't care. I'm sure, you know, it's one of those things. But we come to the last two, and we have done it in themes in a way. The last two are the new kids on the block in the league, and that was Reading Women and Doncaster Rovers Bells. Doncaster had, I think, probably one of the most difficult seasons we've seen from a WSL club in the history of the league, with only winning the one game on the last day of the season, losing players sporadically throughout the campaign, losing their top scorer in Courtney Sweetman-Kirk at the start of the year. Reading did enough to stay up, but I think that, if I'm being brutally honest, if I spoke to some of the more experienced heads in the team, I think they would not look at the season as a successful one. I know staying up is an achievement, but they only won one game as well. They drew a lot, but the fact is they only tasted victory once as well. And I'd be interested to know, Joe, what your views were on the two promoted clubs. And I guess having seen Doncaster maybe a little bit more, how disappointing it was to see them struggle like they did throughout.
Oh, it was upsetting actually to see Doncaster fight their way back into the division and then be relegated in the manner they were. You know, just winning that one game on the final day of the season. It's been a rotten season for everyone at the club. It's been a hard one, and I think it kind of all goes back to the start of the season. Really, they had these huge plans they unveiled, all this stuff for the training ground, and everything looks so positive for the team. They made some good signings. People raised some eyebrows when, you know, England international Tash Dowie went there. They managed to capture her and Becky Easton and Catherine Omar's Dottier, all from Liverpool, and people like, you know, I think people thought, yeah, they're gonna have a decent season here. But I understand building for the training ground hasn't gone quite to plan, and Tash Dowie left fairly early on in the season to go and play in Boston. I suspect the money they spent on her meant they weren't able to bring in other players, because I don't think she'd have been cheap, and they really needed some more players in defence, which is where they really struggled this season. And then obviously losing Tash Dowie, you lost one of your goal sources. As you say, they lost Courtney Sweetney-Kirk to an injury. They also lost Jess Sigsworth, another striker, to injury. They've had no one to bang in the goals up front, and it's just been heartbreaking to see the club regress really this season, because they came up on such a high, such big plans, such big hopes. And because of the way the league's going to change to Wins League now, they're not going to be able to challenge to get back into the league for such a long time. And I know the club came out, Faye Ligo, who's the chairwoman after the club came out and said, yes, it's been a horrible season, it's disappointing, but we're part of a 10-year plan. And I'm sure they are, but for the fans, you know, they want to see them in the, back in the top league where they feel they belong. They've been such a big part of women's football in this country for such a long time that they want to see them back there. And hearing it's a 10-year plan, it's great for the long term, but for the fans, it's going to be another tough sort of 18 months seeing them play in the second division again.
But, I mean, one of the things that you always want when you're a club that's promoted is you want stability. And if you've got players that are leaving and players that are departing or are sustaining injuries, the one thing that surely you want to try and do is make sure that your staff and that your manager is consistent. Now, how much of a rod for their own back did they make when they sacked Glenn Harris? Because that was an odd one that really no one could get their head around.
It was an odd one. I think, like many people, I was very surprised. He went early on in the season, and yes, they'd had some pretty big defeats on their hands. Things weren't going well. But Glenn is an experienced manager, and he's proven his worth. He was the manager that got them out of WSL2, and they got rid of him pretty early on in the season and promoted Emma Coates, who, as far as I'm aware, doesn't have any experience or first-team manager experience, certainly not at that level. So it was always going to be a gamble. And it's hard to say, with, you know, if Glenn had stuck around, would they have done any better? Would they have stayed up? But I think if you're going to make a decision like that early on in the season, bring in someone who I think is great for Emma and it's great for the league to have another female manager. It's fantastic. But to make that decision, to bring in someone with less experience, I think, you know, they needed to stay up to prove that decision right.
Yeah, agreed. And that's not an indictment on Emma Coates, I can assure you.
I
agree.
As I say, it's great to have another female manager in the WSL. And I think she, you know, I've heard people who are very well respected in the game talk very highly of her. And I think she will, and I hope she will go on to big things.
And I'm sure she will be taking that team to the top end of the WSL2 when that continues in September next year, well, after the spring series. Andrew, maybe you want to take Reading, seeing as that Joe's focused on Doncaster?
Oh, quick thing on Doncaster first. From speaking to people in the game, I've heard that it was pretty much Glenn's decision to sort of go top-heavy in terms of spending the budget on strikers. And I think the sword had to fall on him when it obviously didn't go to plan and there lost a lot of goals. And I think he was asked if maybe it should have maybe brought some more defensive minded players in. So when you lose a lot of goals, I think as cutthroat as it is, it has to, if that's his decision to do that and it doesn't go in his way, really someone has to get blamed for it, and you can't sack a whole team. So as football is as ruthless as it is, that, and they didn't get the best start. You're playing Chelsea twice, once in the cup, once in the league, and you get destroyed. It kind of takes that shine off the new season and we never really recovered. For Reading, I suppose there's an old joke about two photographers in the desert, and there's some wine, see them, and the guy starts putting on his Nike trainers and he says, "You think you can outrun a lion?" He says, "No, as long as I can outrun you." And that's Reading. These had to be better than Doncaster to stay up, was pretty much. So as bad as Doncaster, and Reading just had to tread water, and they did get more draws than Doncaster. They may have only won one game, but they got some better results overall, which did keep them up. And now that they've got that place in WSL1, you can see with the saying of Mandy Vanderberg, there's sort of, it's a bit of a statement to say, well, we're in this to improve and not just try and tread water again. We want to get better. And they've got some really good players there, like Helen Ward and Emma Fowles, and players like that who are really, really, really good WSL players. And there's something to build on there. And you hope that for next season, with that, with Survive and with staying up, with, I think, the first of possibly many signings, from what I've heard on the rumours, that there's some money to spend there. And I think it was maybe just getting that place in WSL1, making sure you've got it for the spring series and next season, they can go, and now they've got a full year to build that team and into. And if they can challenge the likes of Notts County Sunderland, they can be a really solid mid-table team.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they did enough. I think you're right. I don't think they had a great season, but I think they had a good enough season to be able to stay up, as was proved by finishing the number of points ahead of Doncaster as they did. I think you're right. They've got plenty to build on. They have young players, the likes of Becky Jane and Lauren Bruton and Emma Follis that you mentioned as well. I think they've got two very, very, very solid goalkeepers. Very solid goalkeepers in Grace Maloney and Mary Earps as well. Mary Earps is obviously getting calls up to the England squad now. So they have something to build on. They just need to maybe add a little bit, like some of the other clubs we've mentioned, like Sunderland and a few others, who maybe need to now find that next level of player that can take them a little bit further on in the league. Well, that kind of wraps up the nine teams, which I said I wasn't going to do, and we ended up doing. But I guess the question I have for you guys is just a couple more. I spoke to Kelly Simmons, and I'll play a line from her very shortly about, we've seen the WSL become very competitive. We've seen the league grow. We've seen attendances go up. We've seen better players come into the league. We saw Manchester City go undefeated, as we said at the beginning of the show. Is there a concern that with the likes of City, Chelsea, Arsenal, the financial power, the ability to attract the players that they can, that the league will become top-heavy and we will see the likes of City and the other two that I've mentioned kind of pull away from the rest, and we have a scenario that we had where Arsenal ladies dominated the National Premier League for so long? Joe, I'll start with you.
I think even heading into this season, there was already two tiers in that top division. I think you have almost a mini league with Arsenal, Chelsea and Manchester City. And if I'm honest, it does worry me. And I think it's only going to get worse. I've had certain people say to me, as I said earlier, pointing a finger at Manchester City and saying, oh, they've bought the league, it's not fair. But rather than pointing a finger at Manchester City and berating them, I think we should be congratulating them on the way that they treat their women's league, their women's team. I think the same can be said for other teams in the league. But one thing that does give me hope is the likes of Birmingham this season. As I say, they've got a relatively small playing budget. They haven't got a team full of superstars. They're not all full-time. And yet they've really competed this year. They've got to a cup final. They've taken those top teams, really pushed them into WSL matches. So, yes, it is a worry. And yes, I think there already is a mini-league within the league. But I don't think that money gets you everything. You've only got to look at Arsenal and the squad that they've got. It's a worry, but I do think that with the right personnel, the right managers and the right attitude with teams of smaller budgets, that they still can compete, but it's going to be blooming tough. And I think Donny Bells have shown this year how tough it is.
Andrew?
Yeah, I think there is a worry. You don't want those three to break away. But in the same, you look at the other leagues around Europe, like the French League has two teams, and you maybe put Montpellier and Juvisé behind them. And with only two Champions League places, it's hard to... It's not just a case of Liverpool, Birmingham break into the top three, because it still doesn't really get you anything, really. You have to go into the top two to get Champions League and sort of progress that way. And when I was speaking to Scott Rogers about this, he said, well, there's no pressure on us to come top three, top two. He's got the sort of the space to build a team, but the pressure's on the top three to be the top three. And Arsenal have shown this season they were close to not finishing it in the third spot, really, really close to it. And if that doesn't happen and players get disgruntled and you lose players, there's always going to be a chance for a well-run team with some good signings, bringing through youth players to push up and challenge that top sort of bracket. But I think those three, and you're better to have those three than have just one. If Man City were going to run away with it and be the best team in the country, that's when it becomes a really non-competitive league and no one wants to watch it. But you've got three teams challenging for the top two and the title. That's going to make it exciting enough. And then you've got other teams who want to show them that it's not a three-team league, like Birmingham, Liverpool, Notts County, I'm sure want to do that. So there's definitely an intrigue behind that. So I really don't think it's going to be a non-competitive league. I think it's going to be competitive for the next at least 5 years, and we'll see where we are then. But I think there's an opportunity for those teams to push the top three, and those three have to challenge each other to where they're going to finish.
Yeah, don't disagree with what both of you have said. I think it's going to be interesting. As I said, I managed to get a quick quote from Kelly Simmons, the Director of Women's Football and Participation at the FA. So here's what she had to say on the subject.
In terms of domestically, one of the things that was kind of outlined with the WSL was that you wanted a more competitive league because Arsenal were, not just because Arsenal were so dominant, but you wanted a more competitive league and for other reasons as well. This season we saw Man City go undefeated, we saw Doncaster have to wait to the last day of the season to get a win, Reading only won one game as well. Is there any concerns that the league could become a little bit top heavy if those clubs at the top are investing and doing well in competitions, and the clubs, for example, Bristol and Yeovil, they've got to invest, because if they don't, it's going to be a struggle for them.
Yeah, it is a concern. It's something that, I don't know if Sue Campbell's mentioned already, but she's talking to the clubs in some detail about, what do we do with the salary cap going forward? How do we make sure we keep it competitive? But then you don't want to clip the wings of clubs doing well in Europe. And you don't want to stop players being able to be professional footballers. So it's a tricky one. We've said that we'll review the salary cap before we kick off the new 17-18 winter season. And we're talking to the clubs about it at the moment, but it's not easy. because you want them to be able to, you just had a discussion, didn't we, about Man City doing well in the Champions League, wanting them to progress. So it's just trying to find the right balance, I think.
So that was Kelly Simmons. Guys, I want to round it up quickly because, Joe, I know that you've got a gym class to get to, and I'm quite happy to put that out there.
You really painted me out to be really professional at this.
I know, yeah. I know. I know that's why you were taking your nail varnish off earlier on. So, really quick one. We obviously have Yeovil Ladies or Yeovil Town Ladies and Bristol City coming up. I've got some quotes from Jamie Sherwood, the Yeovil Town Ladies manager, coming up. But, I mean, Joe, what's going to be the key for them to try and compete with those teams above? Because it's a daunting task when you think that they're going to be coming up against the likes of Kim Little and Eni Luko and Jane Ross and Tony Duggan and all these players that we've spoken about over the last hour. What do they have to do to make sure that they are competitive and that they can not suffer the same results that Doncaster Rovers Bells did?
Two things, really. One, I think on the pitch they have to strengthen. I'm not talking about spending a lot of money or trying to bring in big super name stars. I'm talking about bringing in one or two players each that have experience of being in that top division and knowing exactly what it means week in, week out to go out and play the likes of Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City. And I think they've got to be resilient. The two good things, the thing going, you know, for these two teams is that they've got nothing to lose. You know, up against the likes of Kim Little, people aren't going to give Yeovil a chance on paper, but there's no reason why they can't go out and get a result. I think if they can be resilient, and they will have some big defeats this year, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, I just think that that is what's going to happen. But if they can take them on the chin, learn from them, and not let that, you know, affect their morale, there's no reason why these two teams can't do well in WSL1.
Andrew?
Yeah, I think, as Joe said, I think experience is key. You want to find the right players who know what this league's all about, know what it takes. And I think it's keeping to what's got you there in the first place. Don't change your philosophy just because you're playing against better teams. Like, I remember seeing last season when Bristol went down, I thought they were one of the better passing teams that I saw in WSL. I wouldn't even know Man City beat them. I was really impressed at how Willie Kirk set out his team, and he sort of continued that on. Don't go against your principles that's got you in WSL1. Keep to that, how you want to play the game, how you want to progress. And concentrate on the games against the likes of Reading and Sunderland, Notts County. Those are the ones where you're going to win points. And just take everything you can from the bigger games and learn from playing against the Lionesses, the International Players Squad, and WSL. And yeah, go from there and hope that you can get some. I think defensive focus first and then some goals after that.
Yeah, no, agree with that. Build your foundations and then build on it moving forward. Well, as I said, I had a chance to speak to Jamie Sherwood at Wembley last week. Yeovil Town Ladies were named the FAWSL2 Club of the Year, so I had a quick chat with him about that and about the prospect of facing off against some of these big clubs in WSL1 next year.
Okay, so at Wembley Stadium for the FA Women's Awards, and Yeovil Town Ladies have won the FA Women's Super League 2 Club of the Year to go with their FA Women's Super League 2 Championship. I'm joined by a good friend of mine and their manager, Jamie Sherwood. Jamie, the award tonight tops off a fantastic 2016 for you. Sum it up as best you can.
It's been an amazing season for us. We've absolutely set our objectives. We've hit every target we wanted to hit this year, and it just goes to show how strong this club is and how far this club can go.
Now, you and I have known each other for a little while. I remember about 2.5 years ago us sitting in a cafe in Cardiff, and you said to me, it's a dream and ambition to manage in FAWSL1. You're going to have the opportunity to do that next year. How much are you looking forward to it, and how daunting is it to know you're going to be coming up against Kim Little, Jill Scott, Eni Luko, all those big players that represent their country?
Well, I've got a massive smile on my face, so it proves that I'm looking forward to it. The girls will look forward to it. It's going to be a challenge that some of us have never faced before, but it'll be a challenge that we'll enjoy, we'll embrace, and we'll be on the front foot. We'll go for it. We know no other way. We'll just attack it and see what happens.
What's been the secret? You know, Yeovil Town, not a massive club in men's football, a club that's well thought of, always been very family orientated. You came into this season in your first full season at the club. You brought in players that are familiar to you, the likes of Ellie Curzon, who captained the side really well. You had Sarah Wiltshire before. She obviously had to leave the club temporarily because of pregnancy. What's been the secret to not only being promoted, but to actually win the league title as well?
To win the league title takes more than just talent and ability. It takes a togetherness. an attitude and characters, and that's what we've had this year. We've had attitude and characters, but the biggest thing, we've been a family. We've fallen out, we've made up, and we've done everything we needed to do. So that's the biggest thing that's got us where we've got to. We are together. The team spirit is amazing, and they are my family. They pick me up when I'm feeling down, and we pick each other up and we keep moving forward, and that's what we've built this club on for the last 25 years, and we'll continue to build that in the next 3 or 4 years. That family feeling, that team spirit, and that togetherness, that will take us through to the next level.
And finally, as I mentioned at the start of the interview, FA Women's Super League 2 Club of the Year here at Wembley Stadium tonight. Not just recognising the achievements on the pitch, but this is recognising you, your staff, your volunteers, the supporters. How proud are you, not only to be a league title winner, but knowing that your club has been recognised for everything about it tonight at Wembley?
That's very special. It's an achievement that I don't think I can put into words, really. Like I said, we are a family. It goes from our match day volunteers, our staff, the work that Trevor Jenkins does behind the scenes that no one sees, the hard work he does every day, the 15-hour days that he'll do on a match day. Trevor fully deserves this award, and yes, it is an award for the club, but Trevor does an amount of work that no one sees, and I'm very proud that Trevor's not only my GM, he's a very good friend of mine, and I'm very proud that we've achieved this together. We've done the double, and no one can take 2016 away from us.
So that was Jamie Sherwood. Guys, we will wrap it up. I have one very quick question for you. Who was your player of the season, Joe?
Off the top of my head, slightly left wing, but I'd say Shanice van der Sanden. Just for me, she was the most exciting player to watch. Maybe not the best player on the pitch, but for me, whenever I saw her play, she's the one that got me off my feet and excited to watch her play. So I'd say Shanice van der Sanden.
Andrew?
I have to go for someone from the Champions. Although she only played 8 games, it's a 16-game season. I have to go Keira Walsh. Absolutely phenomenal midfielder, and who knows what's to come from her.
Okay, well, I think mine was probably Lucy Bronze. I think that she has developed not just as a key player for City, but I think she's actually become England's best player as well. Whenever I see her at the international level, she is always the standout these days. So,
just not when she's playing right centre back.
No, I want her to play right back. I want her to play right back. I think when she's playing right back, you have the ability going forward and defensively as well. But that's that would be mine. Well, guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. It's a pleasure to have you on, Andrew, for the first time. Joe, even absolutely. When you are scraping your nail varnish off and you've got a dash off for a gym class. You know,
always a pleasure, Kieran. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. But, guys, thank you very much for tuning in. As always, if you want to contact us, you can do on Twitter. We're on @WosoZone. You can email us on wosozone@gmail.com. And, of course, there's two ways to listen to the show at audioboom.com/WosoZone or on iTunes. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Until then, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.